This is the Mind Your Business podcast.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Mind Your Business podcast. My name is Matt Williams. I run an accountancy business called Cypher, and I am joined in a room full of heroes, but in particular, my good friend, Alan Clark from Exponential Coaching. How are you doing, Alan?
I'm very well, Matt. Very well, and looking forward to our conversation today.
Absolutely. And this is a conversation that feels like it's been a long time coming, because what we're talking about today is kind of integral to my business, but it's integral to everybody's business, I think. So what are we talking about this week, Alan?
So we're talking about technology, Matt, and in particular, how technology is playing an ever-increasing role in every business on the planet.
Absolutely. And this is, we had a conversation off air about this. And if you go back 10 years and pick any business in any industry, and then look at what software and systems and technology that business uses now in 2021, and the move forward, the march of technology is phenomenal. Any industry, funeral directors, painters and decorators, professional services, whatever it is, it's bonkers how fast it's moved. And if you go forwards another 10 years from today, it's scary to think of what could be achieved. So have you got a starting point for this conversation, Alan? Is there something that's triggered it? Have you been talking to a business owner that's using tech, or something appeared that's driven this conversation?
There was, I was part of a judging panel, or a panel looking at new business ideas. And there was some prize money, government funded here. And it was great, and it was really good to look at the different businesses and the different business ideas coming through. But what really struck me was how, in many ways, completely dependent they were on tech, even though the idea is not a tech idea. So if it was in the health and well-being space or the leisure space, the idea itself was not tech-related, but the only way it could come to market and be accessible to users was completely dependent on tech. And I guess whilst I've known that at a level before, you and I are conversing right now over tech, it really struck me. If this is us in 2021, just exactly what you just said about what will it be like in 10 years' time, the amount of tech-enabled marketplaces like Amazon, and there's loads in different industries, all are now huge marketplaces, but they've all got a foundation of tech underpinning it. And we're in 2021, as I said, tech exponentially grows, doesn't it, in power and reach. Every year, whatever the statistic is.
Oh, it's great. I mean, like you've got more power in your pocket today with your iPhone than they had when they put man on the moon in the 60s.
That's right.
Just let that sink in. That's mind-boggling, isn't it? But your point there about these kind of marketplaces coming out, like Amazon and Etsy and all of those guys. I was talking to an estate agent the other day, and he was doing a presentation on his business. And he basically, it was quite interesting because he said, basically, when you go and their job as an estate agent, obviously people assume it's to sell houses, but actually the way the estate agency business works, it's to get people's houses on the market to sell. So their job is to go and do valuations of people's houses, sign them up, and then they sell them, and that's where they make their money. So it's kind of buying their stock, isn't it? It's the key step for an estate agent. And he said, it's really difficult nowadays the conversation has fundamentally changed from 8, 9, 10 years ago, where the customer, you're sat in their house having a cup of tea, you've measured up the house, you're talking about it, and they'd be asking you, what sort of marketing are you going to do? Are you going to leaflet drop people? Is it going to be front and center in your shop? Where's your shop? Is it in the high street? What's the footfall? How are you going to, you know, how are people going to find out about my house is for sale? And nowadays, it's straightforward. You sit there and it's obvious it's going to go on Rightmove. And everyone is looking on Rightmove. There's Zoopla and there's On The Market and the other ones as well. But 90% of people are using Rightmove. And 90% of estate agents are putting on almost exactly the same details on whatever. It doesn't matter who it goes with. The marketing side of it, the customer-facing side, is being done through Rightmove using their system. And it's all much of a muchness. And he said, so it's really difficult to stand out in this new world, because Rightmove has kind of, it's bulldozed over the industry, completely flattened it, made everyone as visible as everybody else. You know, I could set up an estate agency business tomorrow. If I'm happy to pay Rightmove's fees, I could list properties and they'd look just as neat and tidy as any other estate agent that's been going for hundreds of years. It's bonkers, really, isn't it? But there's that industry. You know, if you go back 15 years and say, actually, you can run a really successful estate agent business without having all these shops, without having all the properties in the window, you know, 15 years ago, that would have been alien to the majority of estate agency businesses now. But what's interesting is right at the dawn of the internet, old Sarah Beeny created Purple Bricks, didn't she? Online only estate agents. Because I guess thinking that tech was going to go all the way past where it is now, to the point where you don't need the estate agent. And actually, that business is really struggling and has continued to struggle because people want that personal service. They want to look at the house on Rightmove, but then they want to speak to the agent, and then they want that arm around them. They want that comfort that they're the biggest purchase of their life, you know, which is most people is their house, isn't it? Is it being looked after by an actual human and not the tech? So it's really interesting. You just look at that. The tech's enabled this shift in the industry, and it's enabled wider choice, and, you know, it's given a, like, opened the curtains on the windows behind the business models. But it's still driven by the human element, and it will continue to be driven by the human element, because the buyers are not ready for that next step. So there you go. That's one industry, and you can pick any industry, I reckon, and it's going to be fundamentally changed by technology. And that's why I think this is going to be a really interesting conversation.
And I mean, that's a brilliant example of yet another marketplace, and there's more and more marketplaces in different industries, and they'll continue to be so. So expect that. And yes, it does give everyone a bit of a clearing, a bit of a space to think about the technology it's used in their business right now. And is there more effective technology that actually would either reach more customers or serve these customers better, or load in loads more efficiencies? And I know you personally think a lot in that space in your business. But every business has got that opportunity. And, you know, I think the genie is most definitely out of the bottle with this one, you know, and it gives new businesses with new offerings a fresh opportunity to consider which technology platform and what technology advantages they want to bring in with their new idea. But it also gives existing businesses a chance to really think about, what technology are we using, and is it optimal? And with a bit of investment here, what could that make? And I just think what we all need to think more and more about that in our space as technology continues to really advance or get seriously left behind.
Well, we were lucky. We've had said this a few times. We were really lucky when we set our business up because we had this big, long lead time. So one of the things we did a lot at the early days was test all the different software systems on the market. You know, we knew that we wanted to be based around using Xero. So that our day-to-day kind of the product that we produce, the accounts, the tax, the VAT returns, etc., all of that is driven with either via Xero Direct or via systems that talk nicely to Xero, right? The idea being that we never enter data more than once. That was our mantra. Actually, then that, you know, we came to that conclusion really quickly. And then the rest of the time, the 6 months from that point onwards before we launched, we spent a load of time understanding what we could do to speed up and make efficiencies in all the non-client or the non-product side of our business. So we know that we needed a CRM system that was going to run all of our clients, all of our jobs, you know, who's doing what, when are they doing it, capacity, that kind of stuff. And so we test drove two or three products that all did exactly the same. They're all very much of a muchness, all kind of £40 a month a user or whatever they were. And the one that we picked, the reason we picked it was because it spoke directly to our quoting system, the system that produces our proposals to our client. And the reason we picked that proposal system was because we knew it talked really well to Xero. So what we, and then we've got a direct debit system that also talks to both those bits of software. So we've now got four distinct platforms. We've got a CRM system, a, you know, bookkeeping system in Xero, a proposal system, and a direct debit system. That all four of those are, you know, not, they're probably best of breed, right? They're in that, they're not, they're all good bits of software. None of them are the kind of bottom of the range stuff, but there are competitors to all four of those that work just as well. But the key is that all four of ours talk together. So when I produce a proposal for my customer, potential new client, they sign the proposal and that looks slick as can be. But as soon as they click that it and approve it, it does three things. It kicks off all the jobs in our CRM system. So instantly it changes the capacity of all my people. It fills out their diaries and tells them when they've got new jobs and when they've got to do. It also invites our client into our portal system, gives them a nice email to say, thanks for signing up. This is the anti-money laundering stuff we need, blah, blah, blah. It also talks directly to Xero and creates their monthly invoice. And with doing that within Xero then triggers the direct debit mandate. So within 30 seconds, no matter what time of day a client signs our proposal, and most of our clients sign in the evening, which is quite interesting. Mm-hmm. They hit the accept button and they get a nice video from us from the proposal system. They get all the anti-money laundering info they need and set up on our portal. They get told who their account manager is and a meeting booked in. They get their invoice set up, or no, not sent to them. We don't send that on day one. That's a bit cheeky. And then they get a direct debit mandate and they get this, but it all appears bang, 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 bang. And it means that we've onboarded that client. Typically, they sign up in the evening. By the morning, they've sent us all the anti-money laundering stuff. They've given us who their old accountant was. All the bits that used to take ages in the manual processes of backwards and forwards and lots of emails and blah, 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 is done and dusted before we turn up in the office. And it's, you know, it doesn't cost us any more to do that. We just made sure we picked systems that talk together. And that's the same for any business. There's so, you know, we've got pubs where the tills talk to Xero, and we've got a funeral business where his CRM system talks directly to the crematorium, so we can make sure that he's, you know, booking spaces that are available when he's talking to families and not having to fiddle around with dates and stuff. The key is to make sure that your systems are all open and not closed off. I think that's a massive thing. If you've got a system that's sitting on its own in isolation, no matter how good it is at what it's doing, you're going to at some point have to enter data somewhere else. And that feels like it's probably okay and manageable now, but in 3 years' time, it's not, because your competition are moving forwards into this world where everything's integrated. Does that make sense, right?
Oh, really, really perfect sense. And I was the way you finished, that was where my mind was going. And because actually what's just come up for me is that, okay, traditionally there would be a business and the business competitors, right? So you know who your competitors are and you're competing. But in many ways, that because of the advance of technology and the rise of the technology companies and the wonderful stuff that they can do, they are not for stopping. So they're constantly innovating what's possible with technology, and like your Rightmove example, more than up for disrupting entire industries. So you've got business A in competition with business B, but then you've got the technology that suddenly changes the whole thing. And business A could have a march on business B, but business B starts to invest or use this new technology, and suddenly are way ahead of business A. So, you know, I do see technology, and from the technology companies, that's all fair game, because what they're trying to do is increase their business, and their whole thing is to make it easier for businesses. But, you know, that the flip of that coin is massive disruption for businesses, especially if you don't get on the pitch and start to really to go along with this. So I think it's a really, really interesting dynamic, and it's only going to accelerate.
Well, we're in a world now of big data, right? It's quite scary how much information there is about every individual and every business that's sort of in the public domain, but it's only if you know where to look, right? I was with one of our tech companies has built an online tool which is really good. If you've got a website where most of your customer interaction is based on filling in boxes on forms, so imagine a courier business, right? Most of the, you want to send a parcel online, you have to put in a load of info. These guys have built a form or a system that builds your form for you, which kind of cuts out the people dropping out halfway through. So rather than give you the whole form, it just asks you questions in, you know, the right order to make sure you get to the end, basically. And he was showing me the back end. Now, these guys are top level marketers, right? They're very good developers, but their marketing systems are phenomenal. And he was showing me, you land on his website because you've got a website that may need his tool. And within about 30 seconds of you putting in your name and your customer name, they have harvested 300 bits of information from various sources. It's called it scraping. So basically, they've got these little bots that go out and they scrape all this information from you. And then from that, it will put you into one of two paths. So you don't realize this is that quick. As their page is loading, it's getting this info, it's running an algorithm, and it's basically saying, do you hit these eight things, which means you're going to be a good customer? You know, because they only want businesses of certain size with certain amount of clicks on their website and, you know, brand positioning in certain countries, whatever it is. And basically, as you're clicking from one page to a next on their website, without any particular loading time, it's decided, yes, you're going to be a good customer, or no, you're not. And if you're no, you're not, it basically kind of, it puts you into a different funnel, which is kind of geared to either you growing and coming back, or you disappearing at this point because you're not right for them. And they just spend their time onboarding. If you're in that 10% of people that are in their thing, then it almost, you know, it throws everything at you so that they don't spend time talking to prospects that are never going to sign, or it's not going to be suitable for, or for whatever reason. But as a customer, you have no idea, because you've just clicked on their website and it's either taking you to one page or another. And you look at that, and there's, you know, they're not a small business, but they're not, you know, they're not a giant by any case. And you think, like, that kind of thing, if I had that in my business, that would be phenomenal. But we, at the moment, there is, you know, to be fair, my client tried to explain, he said, oh, you can do it for your business. And he sat me down over lunch and he tried to build it, you know, help me build it. And it was mind boggling, and it's not my bag, right? But there is, that's where it's going to be in 5 years. People are going to come to my website and it's going to know if they're the right customers or the wrong customers. And it's going to give them a different experience and a different funnel and a different end result, hopefully. But it's the days of the yellow pages and, you know, just picking up the first name and the yellow page, that's long gone now. And you just, yeah, this march of data and information about everybody, you can't hide on the internet now, can you? That's where it is. It's people that can leverage all of that data that they know about their customers is where the kind of next big advance is, I think. What do you reckon of that?
I'm speechless, fascinated by what you've said. And, you know, what I think is really helpful about this conversation is many people might know that. I certainly never heard of scraping. It's a particularly pleasant term as well. But yeah, no, stop. However, I think it's incredibly useful to know that that is possible. Not only it's possible, it's used, and in many ways, it's used commonly. And this is 2021. And, you know, I think some people, including myself, sometimes, if I'm honest, they have a wee laugh and a chuckle about being a technophobe. I don't understand technology. But that's in many ways, that's not good enough. Now, just because of the context of technology, given that story that you've just said, I think business owners or entrepreneurs or somebody in their business, but that we need to, as businesses, to get really tech savvy. And we talk about, like, social media is one that's usually used. Oh, I don't really know how Twitter works, and. Okay, but we're going much deeper than that. You know, that technology is to say, you and I are speaking today like this only because of Squadcast. You know, technology, the platform, it is everywhere. And actually, I guess like anything, we can take it as a threat. I don't really want to know about it. It's too much. Make it all go away, or an opportunity. You know, it's right. Okay, this is my business as it stands. What elements of my business could be improved significantly by, that was easy for me to say, technology, and then just stepping in and learning about it and using it.
So I've just thought of a story I was told last night, which plays on this. So I went to a charity dinner last night, which was lovely. It's nice to be back out there, kind of meeting other humans. And I was talking to a guy I know who used to have a business, who's now working at a meat market in London, right? So he works generally in the evenings. He goes there in the middle of the night, and he runs the sales side for this quite well-known meat market. And he was saying that they don't even have tills, right? They have bits of paper, you know, carbon paper, and they write hand invoices out. And he said it is a disaster trying to reconcile anything, right? And he said, why have we not got tills in it? Why haven't we got computers? Why can't I do this like every other business? And he said, this old guy who's been there for 40 years said, you can't have computers in here. It's too cold. They don't work. And he said, and that is it. And he said, he thought about it. Like, when you go to a server farm, right, they are kept at an ice cold temperature to stop them overheating. Like, the cold isn't the problem. It's, you know, for it to be cold enough for the computer to not work, it needs to be cold enough. There's no humans walking around at that point either, is there? It's, so there you go. What I wanted to ask is, I think from my point of view, I've seen small businesses and their kind of route through this technological advance, right? And we've helped businesses move from old manual to modern technological kind of systems. I'm really intrigued. You ran a very big retail business, right, over a number of sites in a kind of world that was not quite pre-internet, but dawn of the internet, right? How do you run a multi-site, multi-site, multi-product, multidisciplinary business without modern technology? Like, how would you get your daily sales reports from all the sites that you were controlling? That must have been a manual process, right?
Oh, when I started my career, it would be on the mainframe, and that would be, wow, every store would have a mainframe. Yeah,
okay.
IBM mainframe, and there it was. You know, some investment, and you've got EPOS, and then suddenly there's different offerings, different reports. You know, the first meaningful reports I got were through the post. They arrived in the post. So there was a post bag, internal mail. Every day you get another report, and it's like, it was, what do you call it?
Dot matrix. So with the light, with the circles along the edge of the paper.
That's right. All that. And then it changed. And, you know, I now, certainly by the time I left, it was balanced scorecard. It was there. There was iPads starting to come out in for anyone to use, could get any information at any time. But, you know, it definitely brought another big challenge in that if you've got all these physical sites, then was the internet, was everyone going to go on Amazon and suddenly you've got these sites and there's nobody going in to shop them? Boots solved that quite well, I thought, in terms of quite quickly identifying what was going on here and doing click and collect very, very well. So, you know, they had the website was pretty good and you could collect a lot of the products in the shops, which continued to drive footfall in. And it was also convenient. You know, not everyone wanted their stuff dropped off at home or they were at work, so they would get it delivered to the shop and then come in. Now, that would have been advanced again since then. But to answer your question, I don't think you can. You know, now you absolutely need Wi-Fi. You need everything at a decent level to be able to cope with the transactions and everything else.
And you need like instant snappy report. Like we've got a chain of cafes, right? Four cafes that have got the business owner on their phone has instant access to the daily sales to the minute. They know who's in their shop, what they're spending across the sites. They could be anywhere in the world as long as they've got internet connection. They've got that visibility. And if you imagine back when you were in Boots at the Dawn, you had a mainframe, you had, even if it was a day behind, you had really, you know, almost as real time as could be back then data. Whereas the small chain of three cafes did not have that. They probably won like anecdotal, oh yeah, we were busy yesterday, or we weren't busy yesterday. How much has gone in the bank?
Yeah.
And suddenly it's leveled the playing field, hasn't it? And then mm-hmm. the fact that actually I can have a storefront of my little e-commerce business that it looks just as flash and jazzy as Boots does mm-hmm. online is phenomenal, isn't it? It's flattened flattened the playing surface to some extent. And then you're back to service, quality of product, price of products. Whereas before, you know, little kind of chemist couldn't compete with Boots for the range of products and all of that kind of stuff, could it? It had no hope at all. So yeah, it's crazy that, like, you look at businesses now, if a big, you know, if Boots had an issue with a server somewhere and you could knock out a load of Boots sites today that you wouldn't be able to do 10 years ago because they were so separate then, that actually now they're connected, there's a risk there now that there wasn't there before, or they're, you know, the move, I guess, across to card payments from cash as well. I remember when I was back in my Halford days and we had a day where an afternoon the card machines went down and it didn't really bat an eyelid because everyone had cash in their wallet, everyone carried on spending. But nowadays, if your till system goes down, your card machines go down, everyone's having to leave to go and get cash out because, you know, I don't even take my wallet out after. If I'm just popping to the shop, I take my phone and Apple Pay it. And that's, you know, the world has fundamentally shifted just in that. It's just in the simple art of purchasing something. It's more common now to use your phone to do it than it is to use actual real money.
Oh, completely. Absolutely. You're absolutely right. You talk about flattening it. It's the great leveler, isn't it? It allows anyone with a laptop and a Wi-Fi connection to get in on the game to some respect. And you're right. Some of the websites that you can get, they just look fabulous. They're absolutely fabulous. They're functional. You can do e-commerce, et cetera, et cetera. But there's still a garage at the back and that's it. But it's enough whilst it's building. So, you know, I always smile when I go on Amazon and you put in fencing, which normally, but well, 10 years ago, you would have just gone to B&Q or something like that. You know, put in fencing and there's got companies all over that will provide. So it's given every company an opportunity. You know, And I know they'll pay Amazon and there's cuts, and of course, and, you know, but it is different. That the whole commercial world is different, and it's only going to become more and more. And, you know, for us supporting entrepreneurs, you know, we really, really, really need to understand the technology that's available and invest wisely, I think is what I'm coming definitely to.
But that's exactly what we did. Like, I'm so glad that we took that time to do that. I think the other side of this, and I'm conscious that we're going to run over time very soon. I think, so we've just talked for the last half an hour about how technology has fundamentally shifted how businesses operate. Over the last 10 or 15 years, every business, every industry is completely top down, top to bottom, different to what it was 15 years ago. However, if either of us ran our businesses back then, 15 years ago, I would say 9 out of 10 of the conversations that we're having with our business owners today would be the same. Irrespective of how their business works, the issues that business owners face is not having enough time, not having enough cash flow, stress with people. All of that is not changed, right? The businesses have changed and they're more complex now, but every business owner is still wants more time back. They still want to make more money. Do you agree with that? That's my take on it.
Absolutely. You know, more than ever, there's anxiety, there's worry, there's, we talked about apathy, there's disruption going on, there's I don't know how to, there's mindset, there's all the human stuff is more than ever. You know, there's more businesses than ever, with more people, and a lot of wisdom's forgotten all the time. So the human element absolutely is very much there as a thing, and will continue to be so. And we've got the technology. So without turning this into a Terminator movie, the technology is there and it's growing. The human needs to understand this and not get disadvantaged by it, you know, be advantaged by the technology. And then you've still got all the human stuff to lead.
The human stuff, that's exactly it. Okay, well, look, I think we're going to need to wrap up there. I'm going to end. I heard an advert on Jack FM yesterday. So I was, you know, local radio station to us in Oxford. We've got a few clients that advertise on there. So we try and support it and listen to it when we're out and about. And there's a business advertised on Jack FM. So one of my clients advertised, their advertisement came on. And then straight after them was an advert from a business called the Oxford Institute for Ethical AI. Now, I'm really pleased that there is an Institute for Ethical AI, because that feels like that's going to keep the Terminators at bay. But secondly, I said, why are they advertising? What? No, like, is there a demand? Are there that many people creating AI that they need to? Who knows? But that, it struck me as slightly odd. But you know what? I'm happy that there are businesses out there that are trying to control this march to, you know, computer-controlled worlds. But there we go. Right. Alan, have you got anything else you would like to say before I kind of stop rambling?
Only with a huge smile on my face, what you just said there about the ethical AI, that we are going to laugh about that in 3 years when it's all over the place. And you say, did I actually say that? It, such is technology. It just evolves at such a rate of knots. So your AI very much in the mix. And like you, I'm glad there's an ethical AI Institute. That's helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, look, on 34 minutes or so, that's all from us for today. We will be back next week with some more podcast gold. But for now, I hope you've enjoyed our conversation on technology. That's all from me, and that's all from my friend Alan.
Bye-bye.
This is the Mind Your Business podcast.